Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. Well, I know that nobody's really interested in what we delivered 4 months ago. Still, do not forget, 2019 is the starting base for all companies and decides how they fare through the current crisis. If you follow me to slide number three, you can see, and I ask you to take a moment and look what kind of foundation we have laid last year. Patrick is going to elaborate on it in a minute. Let us then have a look at the current status, our strengths, and our weaknesses. I guess you want to find out how we are reacting and, probably even more important, how honest we are with ourselves. At the moment, it feels like on a ship which has entered a not forecast dense patch of fog in full steam. Let me tell you this much. We have reduced speed to minimum, asked all crew on board to put on their life vests, and our current focus lies on not hitting an iceberg. In part three, we would like to explain our dividend and guess the conditions we might have once the fog is starting to clear. As promised, let us first have a look in what shape our ship is and how much fuel we have on board. Patrick, please.
Thank you, Thomas, and a warm welcome also from my side. I understand that you are more interested in the future than the past these days. Nevertheless, 2019 was the best year ever, and as Thomas mentioned, it is our starting base. It also gives us the confidence to successfully cope with the challenges ahead as we entered the crisis in a very healthy state. As you can see on chart number five, earnings per share rose by almost 34% to €7.10 in 2019. Also, earnings before taxes showed a profit jump of almost 27% to €70.5 million. Net profit topped the €50 million mark for the first time in the company's history. With this performance, we clearly exceeded our expectations and should have beaten consensus. This outstanding performance gives us a cushion that we can optimally use now in the most challenging economic environment in decades. Most of the challenges ahead are not yet clear enough to quantify them in numbers, but for sure our strong balance sheet should not give us sleepless nights for the time being, as you can see on the next chart. Please turn to slide number six. We have made our homework and significantly reduced the risk profile of the company. Our financial strategy is focused on stability and risk aversity, and yes, as admitted in the past several times, we might have missed opportunities by consequently following this approach. From today's perspective, it has proven to be the right way of doing our business and an appropriate risk insurance. By year-end 2019, our equity ratio stands at 35%. That corresponds to an increase of 7 percentage points since 2016. Equity reaches a level of more than 460 million, the highest equity ever. Our loan-to-value ratio currently stands at 34%. Net debt went down by more than €250 million, and we still have a comparatively high portion of unencumbered assets. We cleaned up our real estate portfolio. With the execution of our pure play strategy, we reduced our standing assets to currently €336 million, with good progress also in 2019. Cash outside the development business was freed up and funds were allocated to improve balance sheet and debt. On top of that, we have proven our ability to steer the balance sheet and also that the control mechanisms in place work. Please turn to slide number seven, cash, which is the most important number these days. I want to stress 4 points. Firstly, our liquidity position is a very good one. This is true for end of last year and also for today. Secondly, the mechanisms to steer cash on a daily basis are in place, a legacy from times where net debt was too high. The third point, the debt repayment profile is very smooth. And the fourth point, 2020 cash always depended on our forward sales, also before the corona crisis. There are no indications that cash from forward sales is under pressure because of the high creditworthiness of our customers. Let me briefly talk about the liquidity position, the first part. Besides the strong balance sheet, also our liquidity position is sound. From year-end 2016 to year-end 2019, our cash level increased fivefold to over 210 million. Our current focus is to preserve the cash wherever we can. We stopped our acquisitions in a very early stage of the crisis and made cash steering the anchor point of daily business. We screened the spending and implemented a series of measures, for example, the use of instruments like short-term work in Austria and Germany. Mechanisms to steer the cash. UBM development is coming from a history where we had to fight against a high debt level, a too high debt level. At that point in time, we implemented internal reporting systems, particularly to steer the debt and liquidity on a daily and weekly basis instead of monthly or quarterly. This includes a cash reporting system, which is based on a direct cash flow calculation and a weekly forecasting. Luckily enough, we can therefore put our emphasis on steering the cash flow instead of implementing the right reporting system now. The smooth debt maturity profile. We worked very hard on the smoothening of the debt maturity profile, as this has also been identified as a threat in 2016. We managed to bring repayments into digestible pieces with 50 million euros in December 2020 and another 50 million euros in November 2021. Remember, UBM was in 2016 a much smaller company with a debt maturity wall of 200 million euros in 2020 alone. And the last point, the incoming cash is secured, at least from today's perspective. A large part of the expected cash inflows for 2020 has already been secured through forward sales, with no indications that buyers will not be able to pay or withdraw from signed deals. Nevertheless, we have to be prepared for variances in the expected cash flows, particularly beyond this time horizon, as sales activities for projects being completed in 2021 could be delayed. On the other hand, expenses can be influenced through the delay of cancellation of projects and the later start of development work. This is particularly true for hotel projects where construction has not started yet. To sum it up, we have simulated various scenarios and we prepared ourselves for significant short to medium term variances. The good news is, our cash buffer creates flexibility to counterbalance uncertainties. This leads me to the conclusion, under each of the current scenarios, that UBM's liquidity position can be considered secure over the next 12 months without relying on additional bank financing or any additional sales. Now back to Thomas.
Thank you, Patrick. Quite encouraging, I would say. As mentioned, you should also be interested how honest we are with ourselves. So let us turn to our weaknesses first on slide 9. Clearly, our biggest strength has turned into our greatest weakness. It is our hotel exposure. This comes with a double whammy, the hotel development business and hotel operations. There can be no doubt that the hotels belong to one of the most affected asset classes. Our hotel development business represents roughly 40% of our pre-corona pipeline. This is the bad news. The good news is that 60% of our pipeline are in less affected areas. I'll come to that in a second. As Patrick has hinted, we focus on our hotel projects under construction only and have frozen developments where construction has not started. So we can limit our attention to 7 hotels. 3 of them are forward sold and basically no worry. These are the 2 hotels in Poland, the Mercure Mlinska in Katowice and the Holiday Inn Express Mogilska in Krakow. The 3rd one is the Super 8 in Mainz. The 2 Polish hotels have been forward sold to Union Investment. The hotel in Mainz is a forward sale to Württembergische insurance group. This is why we say no worry regarding the creditworthiness of our customers. This leaves us with four hotels which have not been forward sold while under construction. It's the Holiday Inn Express in Düsseldorf, the Holiday Inn Express in Potsdam, the Foco in The Hague, and the Anders in Prague. As we are not prepared to offer bargain prices, and as we are under no pressure to make fire sales, we might become holders of these four hotels. This would not be in line with our pure play strategy, and it would freeze the money we put into them. So it cannot be reinvested into new developments. But it is far from being a disaster. The other exposure regards our hotel operations. UBM is the lessor lessee of 13 hotels, 6 in Poland, 5 in Germany, 1 in Austria, and 1 in the Netherlands. We have reacted to the corona pandemic by de facto shutting them down since 20th of March, sending all employees into short-time work and thereby reducing operating costs to a minimum. Under the current scenario, providing for a reopening at the beginning of June and a ramp up as in the years 2008 and 9 or after 9/11 in 2001, we expect an operational impact on group EBT of 10 million euros. Should the hotels open later, we lose an additional million every month. Nothing we have ever expected to happen, but also nothing which will kill us. On the other hand, we can present you with a number of strengths. Just have a look at slide number 10. Patrick has already elaborated on our financial muscle, so let me turn to the project level. All hotel and office projects up for completion in 2020 have been forward sold and are therefore no worry. Regarding any delays caused by the crisis, we have provided for long stop dates as a standard clause in our contracts. Irrespective of our legal position, this gives us additional cushion for handing over all projects, including residential, in time and on schedule. Finally, our pure play strategy gives us less to worry about in the rental arena. Rental losses are therefore less of an issue for us than for other real estate companies. Our standing assets represent only a quarter of our total portfolio, and from today's point of view, we expect less than 5 million euros of negative impact from this end in 2020. While our differentiating feature so far clearly has been the fact that we are Europe's hotel developer number one, I would like to draw your attention to slide 11. With 43% of our current pipeline in hotels, it is clear that almost 60% is in other asset classes, as mentioned. The good news is that 41% is in residential. This is the asset class which most of the experts see as the least affected. And this is particularly true for the kind of apartments which we are developing. We are neither developing luxury nor low-end apartments. We develop for the middle class and expect them to continue to invest in resi, may it be for own use or for pure investment. Particularly as there are widespread concerns about what happens with your money and cash, there is limited downside for our residential business from our point of view. With our focus on 12 metropolitan areas, we have been true to our conviction that the three most decisive aspects of success in real estate are location, location, and location. This brings me to the dividend, the outlook, and almost the end of the formal presentation. Please go to slide number 13. We shall suggest to the AGM payment of a stable dividend of €2.20, like in the previous year. This represents a reduction of payout ratio of 10 percentage points, and even more important, it represents the delivery of our promise of a dividend policy of continuity. We consider it a fair balance of interest for all our stakeholders. We are going to pay a bonus for last year to our employees and, rather than starting with right-sizing straight away, introduce short-time work in the hope that the fog is lifting or clearing up over the next 3 months. we have also decided to pay taxes when they are due. In the light of the above, we would have considered it extremely unfair to tell our shareholders that they do not deserve a dividend for the best year in the 145-year history of UBM. This brings me to the last and probably, and admittedly, the most generic slide number 14. It is far too early to look beyond the fog. There will be medication and eventually vaccination against corona. The created damage will, however, affect all of us and generations to come. There can be no doubt about high unemployment numbers and a wave of bankruptcies probably beginning already in summer. Money will be printed and interest rates should stay low for a very long period of time. And without any doubt, the fear of the next pandemic is going to stay. Still, we believe that there are scenarios which create serious threats not only to us but the entire economy, and there are scenarios which create opportunities not only for pharmaceutical companies and mass producers but also for companies like UBM. We have laid out the threat of an L-shape development and the opportunity of a U-shape recovery. As mentioned, for the moment, we prepare our ship for both scenarios, for both. While managing our upside suboptimally might cause you to miss the one or other opportunity, managing your downside badly might get you into serious troubles. Let me end our presentation on a positive note. A pure-play developer can always make money. In times of boom, by selling projects at an extremely good price. In times of crisis, by acquiring new projects at very favorable terms. The challenge is to manage change properly. UBM wants to prove once more that we are a company which is capable of managing and capable of managing change. Thank you for the attention. I open the line now up for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on the touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, then you may press star followed by two. If you're using a speaker equipment today, please leave the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Stefan Scharff with SRC Research. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Stefan here from SRC from Germany. I have a couple of small questions. Perhaps most important question is regarding your pipeline. Are there any measures now to shift the pipeline more to resi and more to office for the future? And the second question is, the remaining hotels you plan to sell, it's the Dutch hotel, Voco, it's the Czech hotel, and the two German hotels. Is there any difference you assume which hotel could be sold earlier where Corona does not hit the market too strongly?
Is this it, Stefan?
For the moment.
Yes. Well, let me do something which usually only my mother would do to me and congratulate you to your birthday today. And it's no coincidence that you're the first in the row. So our intelligence is up to speed, I can assure you. To your first...
47 now. Only 20 more annual reports until I retire.
Well, that's what you think. I guess the retirement age is going to be much later by the time you are able to retire. But back to your questions. Regarding your pipeline, it might not have escaped your attention and nobody else on the call that we have a record pipeline of 2.5 billion euros, something that everybody has hoped for, but nobody expected us to deliver this quickly. Now, in Corona times, this is probably something you don't want to make a big fuss about. And what we are doing at the moment is we are prioritizing our pipeline. And depending on the scenario, we have projects priority number one, projects priority number two, and projects priority number three. Whatever the scenario is plotting out to, we can then activate them in due course. You've asked if we are thinking of converting some of the hotel projects into other asset classes, and the honest answer is we are considering, but we are not there yet. So give us, please, a moment, and I made the promise this morning in the press conference that by the time of the AGM and the full year, the Q1 numbers, you will get an update on this. As I said, we all feel a little bit like officers on a ship that has hit a very dense patch of fog. Mm. At the moment, our foremost attention is to make sure that, you know, the ship is in a very safe condition and that our fuel consumption is reduced to a minimum, that all our crew is wearing life vests, and that we don't hit an iceberg. And while you're doing this, you don't consider how to catch up some of the time that you have lost or what exact direction the ship is going to take. Now, to your question for the four hotels, obviously, once you've started construction, it's very difficult to change plans, and that's not intention. I would do injustice to any of the hotels thinking of what could be the one that is easiest to be sold. Now, with the Prague Hotel, which is a five-star hotel, we always had, Stefan, I think you're kind of, you know, making some noise, so just move the mic a bit away from you. So with the Prague Anders Hotel, it's a five-star hotel. And with five-star hotels, it's always clear that it gives you an advantage to run them for 2 or 3 years before selling them. Now, it would be dishonest to say that is also what we've planned for the Prague Hotel, but that was always on the horizon. You know that the other three hotels are also very distinctive products and are basically something that the market has needed pre-corona times. However, all four hotels, okay, as is the case throughout Europe, are affected by corona, and there's no need to talk around it.
Okay. And is there any difference in the split where you think it's easier to sell a hotel, the Dutch hotel or the German hotels, or you think it's too early to mention something here?
It's too early.
Okay, and if you have a look at your investment portfolio, at your standing portfolio, it's on slide 33. It's about 12 million of rental revenues. So it's about, I think, 330 million is your portfolio, investment portfolio at the moment. Is there any chance to first to bring up the rental income and second to sell something? I think about 50% is Poland. A lot is Polski.
That's slightly exaggerated of it. Let me answer it this way. At the moment, we are struggling not to lose more, okay? Rather than to bring up the rental income. As it stands, and you've mentioned Polski is a good example for tenants not having alarmed us of any rent reductions or even worse, made us aware that they are going belly up. The contrary is the case. So for me, at the moment, the standing assets and the rental income and the reduction in rental income is a complete footnote compared to all the other real estate companies.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Mr. Andre Remke with Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, and thanks for the presentation. Very interesting. So a number of questions from my side. First, starting with your cash position, you stated 212 million at year end. Now we are 4 months down the road, and you already mentioned some investments like FZ Tower and residential project in Prague. So could you give any indication on the current cash position? Is it similar, higher, lower? Any indication on that would be great. That's the first question, please.
Yeah, I can quickly answer this one. It's similar.
So there were some cash outflow for those investments and then cash in from forward sale, I would say, assume. Is that the right?
Yes, that's right. That's
assumption. Correct. Okay. Then the second question, you mentioned your focus on liquidity position as well as your equity position at the moment, and that probably potentially some opportunities may arise. So how would you describe your approach regarding new acquisitions? Should we assume a complete stop on new investments for the time being?
If I were the CFO, Andre, I would say yes. And nothing else. As I am the CEO, I'm allowed to give a couple of more words. We've immediately stopped our acquisitions at the end of February, as early as the end of February. And we will definitely not look into any new acquisitions over the next 3 months. That is a safe bet. By then, we expect that the fog has cleared up, and that's the precondition to look at. I think there will be plenty of opportunity, because I'd be surprised that an industry which is traditionally over-leveraged is not going to get into its own troubles. And that is bringing back the point that I made at the end of the presentation, which is that a pure-play developer can potentially, at least, always make money in good times and in bad times. And that is what we are getting prepared for. But we don't want to be the first. We want to be the safest.
Mm-hmm. Probably next question to the CFO then. How do banks react at the moment in the current situation when it comes especially for your current project financing? Are they asking for higher margins, or have they opportunity to do so, or just to put more equity into those financings? So, and regarding the hotel projects not yet forward sold, is it possible to finance these projects via your own means, i.e. only with equity? Because I would assume that bank financing could be difficult also for new financing. And what is the currently needed CapEx still open for those projects?
Okay. This is more than one question you have asked. Let's start with the hotel question at the end. So if you're currently in the position that a hotel has not been forward sold, that makes it a little bit harder to finance it with the bank. So you have asked, have we prepared for the CapEx we are going to spend? The answer is yes. So the hotels which are currently under construction, there is only one, which is the FOCO in the Netherlands, where we had expected that we will sell it in the first quarter, which didn't happen due to Corona. And this one is not yet financed. The rest, is it Potsdam or Düsseldorf or the hotel in Prague, that these are hotels which are financed already or have been financed in the past. So we are not coming into the position that we need to finance them. So have we catered for that CapEx in terms of liquidity / equity we have to put into it? Clear answer, yes, of course, because we can't exclude that it is not possible to further going on the road further down to finance these hotels. So for all the rest of the projects, what we are currently seeing is that banks start to negotiate with us again. So they had a phase where it was pretty difficult to talk to them at all about any kind of topic. It starts to get better, and in the residential and office area, I see good chances that you can talk to banks how to finance your projects you are planning going forward. That doesn't mean that they are not coming back with higher risk margins and not yet discussed to the end if this is appropriate or not, or with higher equity pieces in it. I wouldn't exclude that this is coming in the future as a discussion, but I cannot tell you firmly now because we only have started the discussions with the bank for several projects. And as I said, this is something we can do the last, let's say, weeks only, where we have even started to talk to the banks again.
Mm. And again, what is the currently needed CapEx still open for the four hotels? Do you have a number in your mind?
I can tell you easily for the hotel in the Netherlands, that is roughly 30 to 40 million. Which is still missing, but for the rest, I have to look it up and come to it after another question.
But let me jump in here as a little support to Patrick. As he mentioned, for the other hotels, okay, it's fully financed. Yeah. So, you know, the CapEx doesn't run against anything but the bank loan. And yes, reporting duties might be more cumbersome than they used to be, but it's nothing that goes against our liquidity because the liquidity comes from the bank financing. So I wouldn't dare to say a no worry, but none of your concern regarding how much fuel do we have.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. And probably a last question on your condo sales and residential. Is this already affected by the crisis, or do you already see lower demand here?
That's an interesting one, because all brokers keep on calling us saying they need new material, because the online viewings have exploded almost. Okay, and that's very consistent throughout all of our markets. I.e., this is true for Austria, for Germany, and for the Czech Republic. At the same time, okay, there are no signatures under the contracts because you need to see your notary, and that is getting more difficult. The reason why we believe that the experts are right in the resi segment being least affected is that people are really worried about the money, and that is what they are reflecting back to us when we ask them for the bank financing. Because in many cases, they tell us that they don't need any bank financing, that their financing is equity or already secured, and they're more worried about the financial crisis further down the road and what happens with their money and all the rest than anything else. And here I think we are targeting exactly the right segment. We are not targeting the needy ones, so to say, or the ones that are in need of a very high leverage. And we are also not not targeting the luxury segment, because I think in the luxury segment, you see people bargaining. I mean, you would do that, I would do that at the moment, because you're kind of, you know, betting that all of the developers that are highly debt financed would give you a discount just to meet their debt services. So from that point of view, a mixed picture. And again, as you would expect in the midst of dense fog, not a very clear one.
Yeah, because I really fear that people are waiting to spend their money, even if residential could be a good idea, but nobody knows how prices will react, and brokers are always optimistic. Okay, thank you very much, and thanks again for the presentation.
Sure.
The next question comes from the line of Julius Tinauer with Hauck & Aufhäuser Privatbankiers AG. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. So my first question is on the hotels. So they are all closed now. Have some reopened already, or will some reopen soon? Do you do any preparations to reopen the hotels, or is it, how does it differ from country to country?
Good question. Of course, we are doing all the work that is necessary, i.e. opening the water pipes and everything, so that the hotels can be open within a very short, notice. At the moment, as I said, we have 6 hotels in Poland and 5 in Germany. So this is the predominant market. As long as the borders are not opening, okay, from the pure domestic traveling, it would not make any sense because you need an occupancy rate of 25% to turn positive, okay, just as a rule of thumb for that type of hotels that we are running, which is the former 3 or 4 star hotels. It's even higher with 5 star. So we have to wait for politics to send a signal, and that's too far away still to happen for us to get into preparatory work. As I mentioned, and it might have been overheard, we have sent our employees into short time work. I.e., we do not need to get new people from the market and school them and get them engaged with the hotel for a minimum period of 3 months, depending on that short time work to be extended. We have them in standby modus, which would again allow us to open the hotels pretty quickly.
And is it rather leisure driven the occupancy rate, or is it business travelers?
No, it's a mix because it's pure city tourism. I mean, that's the good news. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably.
It's pure city tourism, and it's always a mix. And in the past, it was always that the one group made up a little bit for the other group if the other group showed weakness. We expect business travelers to come back more quickly in our scenario than the leisure tourists. And the last to come back are the tourists that go to big congresses because they need the longest lead time.
Okay, and then one more question here on the acquisition stop that you have at the moment. How does that affect the, is there any effect on the P&L, on the revenue side? I mean, usually because in the past with acquiring projects, you could sometimes have some gains there already. How would that affect your P&L going forward?
I mean, if we're talking about short-term effects, there is no effect from stopping the acquisitions now, because most projects which we take on board are not projects which would impact our results this year. So that would be very uncommon. It would be only possible if you trade it immediately. And in the current market, that is probably committing suicide, acquiring in the hope that you can trade it easily. On the long term, Thomas has mentioned that there is a full pipeline currently. So we are in a, from that perspective, good position that the pipeline has already been filled quite well in the past. So I don't think that we are ruining our future by just sit there and wait until the fog has settled a bit or is clearer to us what is happening. So that is the reason why we did the acquisition stop immediately.
Okay, thank you. And one last question on the expiring debt in December. Do you have anything in mind how you will repay it? Do you think of bonds again, or is there a possibility to pay it in cash, just if the situation remains the way it is? Or
so, I mean, I catered for it that I can repay it in cash without asking a bank or without asking the market and need another product at the market. The question you are asking is the debt market opening again for a company like UBM? I can answer it from a current perspective, and the answer is currently the debt market is not open to companies like UBM, neither on the bond market nor on the Schuldschein market. So if that might change in the second half, let's see. But from today's perspective, the most important message you should take away that we have catered for it in our cash position.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Simon Stipping with Warburg. Please go ahead. Mr. Stipping, can you hear us?
I'm sorry, I was on mute.
No problem. Good afternoon. Please proceed. Thank you.
Great. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the presentation. I basically have three questions, and I would ask them one by one. The first one would be regarding the L-shaped recovery, and just given the hopefully unlikely scenario that there will be an L-shaped recovery, would you then, if you have to take on the completed hotel assets on your own balance sheet, what do you estimate at first that this the whole cash volume bound on your balance sheet would be? And second question, is it then that you have to buy out your partners, or is it just your for example, 50% participation in the project?
Okay. So let me ask the question step by step. So in terms of position, how much we would to have to invest into it. If you assume that you get after they have finished financing for the standing, which is, I think, at least realistical from today's point of view, and that would be 50% of the LTC. I did a calculation, and that came up with a 115 million, which would lie in the project. So a good piece of that has already been invested into these projects because it's our equity piece, and some piece have to be put on top, but that is not a number we need to invest. It is a number which will be bound into the projects. In terms of balance sheet, I need to cater for 150 million, roughly, because one of the projects, if, as you have pointed out correctly, is fully on our balance sheet, which is the FOCO in The Hague. So the debt would also be on my balance sheet. All the rest is at equity, the other three, and I'm not expecting that any partner would drop out and we need to buy the stake of the partner.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the second question would be in regard to occupancy and your occupancy assumptions in regard to the hotel leasing business. Just to get a little bit more color in regard to how the ramp up would actually start from June until December, and then also cross-check on a number that I got that right, that you said 25% is the break-even occupancy.
Now, the... Yeah, well, I gave a general number on the break-even occupancy, but let me start by answering the question with the observation that the guy running our UBM hotels operations is a very experienced guy by the name of Rolf Hübner. He has been a general manager of a hotel when 9/11 happened back in 2001. He's an old hand, so to say. I hope he forgives me if he listens into this call. But he has no illusions. And he has been responsible for the Central and Eastern European assets of Interconti Hotels Group, IHG, when the Lehman crisis has happened. So I think that gives us quite some comfort that he's not overly optimistic or he's not an Excel spreadsheet guy only. Of course, the numbers that we are mentioning is always an average of an average, okay? And you need to see that we have started with an occupancy rate in Poland, to pick an example, of on average 36%, okay? And that seems to be realistic because, as I said, the hotels would only open once the airlines are flying again and once there is enough demand also domestically. And that then slowly goes up until November, to be precise, because December for us is a month that is a mixed month because of the, of course, holiday season and the business travelers that we have in the city hotels. Altogether, okay, the averaged occupancy rate, and Simon, I think you've been on the call this morning, and in order not to cause any confusion, the average occupancy rate would be 45% throughout the year 2020, okay? Which for us at the moment appears to be conservative enough, but is always up for revision because we all do not know.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for now. But this, the average of 45%, does it also include, I assume, a very good month, January and February?
Yes. The first quarter, unfortunately, is the weakest in the hotel business, but it includes the normality, the old normality, so to say, January and February, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And the third question would be in regard to supply chain. And I just wonder if you see any supply chain delays, I mean, and ranging from raw material to also workers on the construction side.
Well, it depends from market to market. In Germany, we are suffering from the Polish workers not being able to travel because they are a key part of the workforce in Germany. In Prague, and maybe because of the specific situation with Sugar Palace, we have suffered from supply being held up at the border, okay, because we couldn't source it locally. And in Austria, it was neither the one nor the other. It was more the interruption caused by the government for 10 days. Which, of course, meant that you had a certain period of time to put the construction site into hibernation, if you want, and then to revive it again. The least affected, maybe not surprisingly, was Poland. Okay, they seem to have fared best in the course of things, and I'm not aware of any hiccups other than the fact you must imagine, okay, now the workers cannot use the same elevator anymore. I mean, elevator under quotation marks. So they have to go up one by one. They didn't do that at the beginning, and we are very strict on it because you don't want to use the staircases 100 times a day. Okay? So don't get me wrong, and let's not underestimate it. The execution of the project was clearly handicapped, but the interesting thing about the execution and the construction is that they are used to improvise. And so they found it easier than other branches of business to do the improvisation. And by now we've got all the masks and disinfectants and whatever other protective measures in place. And the sites are running more or less according to plan again.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That sounds good. And just one last one, a follow-up to what you just said in regard to supply chain delays and supply chain interruptions potentially. Is that then considered a force majeure, or how is it actually seen in a delay in completion, maybe longer than your long stop dates?
Again, we are in dense fog. You know, in dense fog, you don't think of the potential litigation that comes out of it. I am of the conviction that if I have to think of another force majeure, of more force majeure than this, I can only think of a comet that hits the world, okay? And that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs. I mean, can you think of something that is more force majeure than the current situation? But of course, and being a lawyer myself, at least a trained lawyer myself, it's a different story in hindsight when you go to court. So the best is to take all the precautionary actions that you avoid this, which might or might not be the case in the future.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your time and information.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions at this time. I hand back to Mr. Thomas Winter for closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your attention and your interest, and there were quite a few participants, more than we usually have. Patrick made basically my final remark, saying the most important thing you should take away is that liquidity is key to us. We are used to manage liquidity, and there is enough left for the foreseeable future, which is the next 12 months. So I think I can only end the presentation by saying the second most important message that we have is that you should take away that we are honest to ourselves. We are not telling you, okay, life goes on as we are used to, as we've been used to it in the past, and no worry, we come back bigger than ever in hotel or whatever. I think we have a realistic view, and as I said, managing your upside badly might cost you the one or other opportunity. Managing your downside badly might threaten you in your very existence, and that's not what we are planning. Bear with us so that we can prove to you that we are able to manage change as we have managed change in the last 4 months. Thank you very much for your attention, and have a good afternoon.